Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
So we're going to talk about rage today, anger, temper.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Is the modern world and the environment we live in, is it making us more prone to rage?
I think it probably is. I don't know about you, but certain things really irk me and push me towards losing my temper. And a lot of that is the inanimate kind of, like, you know, dealing with the world where there's no human being to talk
okay,
with.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've selected one. And then thank you. And it hangs up. I mean, I think the world and the lack of interface with human beings creates an awful sense of frustration, to be honest. And I just think how complex our modern world is. And then we've got smartphones, we've got devices in there in our relationship with our children and all that. I think the modern world is particularly...
And so much coming
so
at us
much
at
information.
All times. Like, were we built for this complexity?
Not at all. And then, of course, like, fake news and truth and what's true, and then AI, and is that actually... All of this stuff is sparking our amygdala, our warning system, to kind of figure out, are we under threat here? Is there a threat? And I do agree with you. I think the modern world is so dense and complex, we don't know how to make sense of it.
And a really simple thing as well, you point out that most of us probably aren't getting enough sleep anymore either.
Yeah. If I could cure one thing across Homo sapiens, it would be a good night's sleep. Because you can process a lot better, you're a lot less quick to agitation, you're a lot less susceptible to low nadir dips in your mental health. A good sleep, Brendan, is such an important thing.
Yeah, totally. Different person after a good night's sleep.
And it's the one thing we can actually bring into our kids' lives. We can actually bring that in by taking the phone out of the bedroom and having a better policy around the phone.
Okay. So look, some people, like, you know, you'd say about people, oh, he's an awful temper, or she's an awful temper. Are some people born more hot-headed, or does life do it to them?
I think there's definitely genetic markers in there as well. You're predisposed genetically to, like, you know, a quick temper and that. But I think probably more it's the environment around it and how we respond to it and our early childhood experiences. And I just want to say, first of all, before we get into it, it's normal to lose your temper. It's normal to be angry. I think we're good at talking about sadness and loneliness and isolation and that, but we don't like to talk about the fact that we have a temper, or we don't like to talk about anger. I think we teach our children very early on to shut down those emotions around anger and, you know, not to express them and all that. And that's why it blows up later on, explodes later. It's important. We all feel it. We're primed to get angry. I'd much rather have that in my system here as a human being than not ever. You know,
so it has its purpose,
It's absolutely necessary. And it's not necessarily a bad thing either, Brendan. And whenever I watch these videos on TikTok and it's some sort of, like, you know, guru who is some peaceful, blissful, transcendent way of living the world, I'm thinking, no, that won't get you through it. If you're going to be like that the whole time, of course we get angry from time to time. And that's a natural response to whatever is the perceived threat or whatever is in front of you. It's actually designed to narrow you down and focus on something that's really upsetting you.
Okay.
So it's good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
If it's over, it's
so,
like a smoke alarm.
So when you
arm,
say that about,
going, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get to that then, so it focuses you down on the things upsetting you. So is that what's going on in the brain then, that you're focused on that, but you're forgetting
that's
forgetting
the problem.
Everything else?
Yeah. It's a norepinephrine. It actually focuses the brain down. Right? It's a hormone that focuses all your concentration. So you could be friends with someone for years and they say something that irks you, they've been saying, and all of a sudden that friendship is gone. It's just that word that they've said. And that's why I always say, what's the greatest defense that we have against it? A bit of distance, you know, just take a break from the conversation, because then all that calms down. You can get the whole image back in your mind again. You do become quite narrowly focused when you're angry. Someone beeps you in the traffic and all you're focusing on is that, right? And so it's about trying to figure
out. Your brain doing
that's
that
your brain. I mean, there's a whole cocktail of hormones and things going on in the brain. The amygdala has a jump on the prefrontal cortex. So the amygdala is the ancient part of the brain.
Yeah.
That's the warning system. I'm sure we all know about the amygdala. We hear about it all the time. That's the warning system. That's what's getting you ready for your threat. That was really important to us when we were starting out as Homo sapiens. You know, the woolly mammoth over there, the noise in the bush over there.
Okay.
That was really important. As we move into a much more complex life and all that, the amygdala is still functioning in that ancient level, but we have this thing that made us formidable, this thing that made us like the greatest species that has been here, the prefrontal cortex.
The rational,
the logic, the maneuvering your environment to suit you. That actually, which is interesting, that goes offline when you're angry.
Oh, so the amygdala
gets a jump on it.
Okay.
Right? Because it goes to the amygdala first, then goes up into the near frontal cortex, then goes back down. And sometimes it doesn't go up because the threat is so great.
Okay. So that's our starting point. Yeah. Anger, normal.
Normal. There's a whole lot of cocktail of biology and physiology.
And good
going
to let it out.
Yeah, well, see, I think there's often that kind of thing in psychology. Express it. Well, you know, maybe not so much if it's, if it's explosive.
Okay.
Suppressing it. You know, and passive aggression, not good. Exploding, not good. Trying to figure out why, you know, the triggers there, trying to figure out the impulse there and what caused it. In my experience working clinically and living as a human being, I know myself who's lost his temper over the years, you know, my wife has talked to me rationally and said, you know, and helped me with it, if I've been honest, in my 20s and all that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one time in a chipper, someone said something and I was, you know, irate. And my wife said to me, sitting down afterwards, if you get into a fight with that guy there and you win, that's a loss. If he beats you up, that's a loss. It's a loss all round. And it just changed my mind about my temper when I lose it like that. I was like, okay, that's a loss. There's no winning here.
Okay.
And it just actually allows you to think about things a bit better. And so we all lose it from time to time. But yeah, it's just about trying to figure out that, of course, there's a whole cocktail of things going on here, how we respond to it. We can't fix our environment. We can fix how we respond to things.
Okay. So you mentioned there our early childhood can affect what kind of temper we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
In what way?
Oh, I would say that's probably the greatest thing, Brendan. The frustration that you feel in childhood, the powerlessness that you may feel in childhood, the injustice. That's a huge trigger for people, injustice, right? Shame, abuse, a traumatic childhood. All of those things, actually what I talked to you about there, about the relationship, the balance between the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex, it disrupts it. And so people often live, in my experience, they live in a heightened sense of vigilance, a heightened sense of overreactive behaviour to a negative stimulus. And that's that early childhood disruption. So they can't process their emotions. This is the way I always describe it when I'm talking to teenagers and adults. I call it the tiger in the car park. And I say, you know, you go into the zoo, right? And you see a leopard or a tiger, or the orangutans, or whatever it is. Your amygdala is looking at that, and it's fired a message up to the neocortex that says, glass, zoo, safe. So you don't run through the zoo screaming and roaring, because you've engaged rational brain, right? But if you go back into the car park, now this is the tiger in the car park, if you go into the car park and that tiger is standing in front of you, now the rational part of the brain is not online. Now it's just the reaction, the energy, the adrenaline, the noradrenaline, all of this stuff that has to come online to make you run, fight, whatever it is. But for many people, Brendan, for a lot of us, that heightened vigilance, that heightened reactive response to negative stimuli, that is their way of dealing with it, because they never learned how to process, to think about things, because it was disrupted. It's just a dysregulation in their balance. And so when I see people overreacting, say at a concert about the drink, whatever. That's an early childhood rupture that you can see the child, and we all have that child.
Yeah, okay.
And I speak to that child myself personally. You know, I speak to him when he gets roused up, when he's aroused and all that. I speak to him and say, there you are. There's nothing here that's threatening at all. And he just calms down again a little bit.
Okay. So you use the word powerlessness there.
Yeah,
is
huge.
Anger, even as an adult, is about a sense of powerlessness and injustice,
it is it's kind of like a maladaptive response to that powerlessness. It's like it's the great antidote to fear, isn't it? You get aggressive and you get big and you get, you know, physically going to deal with this thing. That's the antidote to kind of fear, powerlessness, to feeling like weak, to feeling vulnerable, to feeling maybe shameful, maybe to feeling, I mean, I think frustration.
Okay,
is
so you're angry at yourself, really.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I work a lot with anger management with clients and all that, and I'm trying to figure out what's the trigger, and then I try to look at the gestalt, what's the hole here from their childhood that has been triggered by a small thing up here, because in their adult life, there's not that massive threat. Someone beeping in the traffic to me is someone just reminding me to go forward. But to someone else, that could be absolutely diminishing, making me feel powerless. They think I'm nothing and they get out of the car to deal with this thing. But when you trace it back, it's an experience of their childhood where they felt like that. And so they're trying to ameliorate that child who felt so vulnerable, threatened, and this overreaction. And it's about trying to figure that out.
So we need to figure out our triggers. Yeah. And obviously not all of us are that traumatised from childhood, but we all have stuff.
See, that's the brain with trauma and all that kind of stuff. It's just processing information. It can't make sense. It's trying to process all that's going on there. And so, yeah, that's what it's like for a lot of us, Brendan. So we need a bit more compassion for each other, you know?
Okay.
It's a really important thing. I was coming back from the Philippines there last week and a mother was on the flight and her baby was crying, you know.
Oh, yeah. And That'd be a trigger for a lot of people.
And that was a trigger for her, the mother, right? Yeah. And I could see it. And I was walking up and down, you know, because it was a long flight. And I said to her, he's fantastic. I said, he's a lot better than what my kids would be like when they were that age. And I could just see her relaxing. And then when I did it for my own sake because I wanted the baby to stop crying. And then when she relaxed, the baby stopped crying because she was tense and she was, you know, frustrated and people around her were angry. And it's just like, if we have a bit more compassion for each other.
Okay, but go back to triggers then.
Yeah.
What might, like, say regular people who don't have, like, some kind of rage problem or anything, tend to get a bit angry or whatever, right? What might the triggers be for a lot of us?
Whatever, it's right in front. Yeah, but like I think as well, like, say if there's not something deeper there underlying, we often have an expectation that we shouldn't ever be irked.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. What sort of life is that? Who told you that?
I heard Eckhart Tolle say this thing on something I was listening to. How do you feel about reality? I'm against it, you know?
Yeah, the pointlessness of that. It's annoying and you don't always get what you want and we all want to get our own way and all the rest of it and we don't always get our own way and we have to live in that kind of space and I suppose that's what I would see a lot of when there isn't the deeper stuff. It's like an unrealistic expectation that life won't irk you, that there won't be a child on the plane crying, that there won't be someone sitting next to you heavy breathing, that, you know, if we're looking around for these annoyances all the time, by God, Brendan, in reality and living with the public, you're going to see them all the time. It's like you're living like Larry David, you know, constantly looking to be irked by society and it's going to be there. So again, I would look
and
at
And you're
my,
the loser there, really.
How could you be enjoying yourself?
You're generally getting angry about stuff.
If you're sitting in a restaurant, you're going, you one over there is scooping her peas, it's driving me nuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying the meal there?
Yeah, you're the one drinking the poison and expecting them to suffer.
Exactly. And that's, like Eckhart Tolle said, that's not reality. Reality is that you have to learn that you don't have control over that, but you can control how you react to that.
Yeah, okay. Right, let's start. Let's go through the ages of anger, right? So we start with a small kid lashing out, meltdown. Yeah. What's usually going on there?
Normal. You know, that's normal. I often hear parents talking about, you know, he's 2.5, 3. He doesn't like sharing. I'm like, yeah, totally.
Okay.
What 2.5-year-old loves to share all their toys? Very little. So that's normal. You know, what I'd often laugh about is that parents come in and they say about, he threw a tantrum at the cash register. And I'm like, of course he did. That's the best place to throw a temper because that's nuclear damage there. Everybody is focused in on it. And so you get your way there more. You're more likely to get your way. I said, did he get his way? Well, I did give him the chocolate because it would calm him down. I was like, well, now he's learned that this works.
That strategic.
Yeah, now he learns that his temper has a value and currency.
Yeah, but like the fact is, anyone's going to say like that the temptation in a public situation like that is absolutely to just go, okay, do whatever needs to be done in this moment and we will discuss the consequences of this afterwards, but give him the chocolate there and then.
See, I wouldn't do that now personally. And I wait.
People are going to be saying, there's your man Richard Hogan. Yeah. He knows all about parenting and everything. And look at him, he can't control his own child in the supermarket.
You see, that's whose voice is that really? That's my internalized idea of what society is saying.
Okay.
I don't know if that's actually what people are saying. And if it is, okay, I can live with that. But I would talk to the child afterwards and say, you know, I don't always do this when I'm working with children. I'd separate out the behavior from the child. And I'd say, you know, that behavior you chose at that moment.
Okay.
That's the way I'd always do it because in psychology and in art of therapy, we say, you know, the problem is the problem, the child isn't the problem, so the problem is the behavior. And I'd always give a child power and agency over their behavior. When you say you're really bold, no, that's not a great way to deal with that. You're really bold. I'd say, you know, that behavior you chose there, why did you choose that? Did you think you were going to get the magazine, the Peppa Pig magazine, whatever it is, but you didn't get the magazine, and now because you decided to use that behavior, you're not going to get it next week when we go shopping either. And so you're taking.
And like, is that going in for a small kid? Yeah.
Yeah, for a 5, 6 plus, absolutely.
Okay.
It is absolutely. You have to kind of teach them and learn to regulate their emotions and show them that this stuff. It's okay to express that. You know, it's okay to have your emotions and all that, but it doesn't give you any leverage here.
Okay. So it's not going to get you.
It's not going to get you because honestly, Brendan, I've seen it in so many years in my clinic. Right. It starts off with that, and then it moves into slamming the door, and then it moves into cursing, and then it moves into this, and then it moves into I live how I want to. in this family, and then you've an inverted hierarchy, and it's all these small little incremental steps that you missed along the way to give in on the fight because it was too much public traction here, you know. And I said,
so you need to make the hard decision.
Yeah, hard decision for a better outcome in the long run.
Okay, now, even if the child has been fine up to then, teenagers, a lot of people can find kids challenging, highly reactive, emotional. Are they wired for fits of anger and rage?
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a huge imbalance in adolescence between the limbic system, the reward aspect of the brain, and the prefrontal cortex. In fact, that part of the brain develops first. And so in adolescence, that is what neuroscience would say is the neural subtrait for why adolescents overreact. They're designed to overreact. They're designed to be more emotional.
So then what's our response to
exactly.
that?
Well, then the response
not
to
their
that.
Fault, like.
Well, the, no, it's not that you it's not that you align with it and say you're off the hook here because, you know, evolution and all that. No. You're going to try to explain to them their behavior, why they decided again to choose that behavior. Did it get you any value there? You know, but they also might see it in the adult world. They might see mom or dad, you know, having a strop and getting what they want, and they think, "Oh, this works. So I'll do it myself here down here for 14 or 15. I'd be always speaking to them, Brendan, when their cognition is cold. I'd never get into it when they're hot. You know, as I often say, does anyone ever calm down when you say, Brendan, would you ever calm down? You know, it doesn't work.
So when they're hot, what kind of walk away from it?
Yeah, I would try to just take it down.
Yeah, okay.
To de-escalate.
Okay, but don't try and solve it there.
Don't try to solve it in because your cognition is hot. As I'm saying to you, the prefrontal cortex is offline. When you're hot, when your cognition is really hot now, your logic, rational, all that kind of stuff, clear thinking, that's gone. There's a fog over that. And just your threat is just right in front of you.
Yes, yeah. So you see, you're trying to win an argument.
You're trying to win
with somebody who's like not even thinking rationally. You know you've got good points to make them why they're wrong, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're, it's pointless.
And your child is sitting there, and my daughter said to me recently, you're just waiting for me to say I'm wrong. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not, but a little bit maybe was kind of like, you know.
Okay.
But and so that, just that right fighting, and always watch out for that because that's always going to position you in conflict with your children.
Okay. Come here, girls in particular. There is a view now that we conditioned them for a long time to kind of kind of the other side of the people pleasing thing to lock away their anger, push it down, all that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And that we should actually encourage girls and women to express it a bit more.
I've been saying this for years, Brendan. I've been saying it because I have three daughters and so I'm living it, right?
Yeah.
And I was saying for years, I think what we've done to our children over the years, particularly girls, is rear them as carers. The good daughter, the good wife, the good sister, the good mother, the good friend. You know, that position of caring, because society kind of needed it, not even the house, society kind of needed it, but the house also needed it. And what I'm often talking about anger, you know, we're saying that anger is actually an important emotion. If you're there in your house and you're 45 and you're female and you're shoving the washing into the washing machine and you're lashing that door, that anger is there for a reason because it's trying to say to you, focus in on the injustice that's in your life here. Why are you the one who's been saddled with all of these things? But if you're just raging and you don't know what the rage is about and you're not listening to it, you're not picking up the messages it's conveying, you're missing out on why your anger is there.
And so then what you're trying to do then is come up with like a healthier way and it for men and women of asserting yourself
and expressing why you're annoyed, why actually this is unjust and why we need a better system in the family here. It's such an important thing.
But so it is anger, but it kind of done in
but it's important
cold cognition calm way.
It is anger, but that anger is important. And what I've done with my daughters, and I was so clear about it as a parent, and is that, you know, myself and my wife, is that it's okay to argue with us, it's okay to make your point, and you made a good point there, right? And so you're showing them that you don't have to agree with people.
Okay.
I don't want her to, you know what I mean?
It's
okay to argue with me.
Yeah.
It might be that behaviour.
Because actually, now that you say it, in a lot of ways, it mightn't always be that we didn't let women, our society didn't encourage women to express their anger. It might be that society didn't encourage women it encouraged them away from confrontation.
It did. And you're dead right.
And actually confrontation
is good.
Which gets a bad rap.
Yeah,
that's
it's good for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're in an unjust system, confrontation is what's going to reset it. And you're going to have to confront whatever it is there. And we shouldn't have our daughters being fearful of confrontation. And it's not and I think also we taught them that it was like a masculine trait, you know, to be conflicted and to be testosterone and to be strong. No, that's exactly what I was trying to instill in my daughters is you stand up for yourself, you fight back, you push back against something that you don't feel right. right, might be wrong, I might have brought in a rule that wasn't fair, I want to hear if it's not fair. Yeah. And you're trying to instill that, and of course at times it bites in the arse when they're fighting with your back, you're going to go, maybe I shouldn't have made this so that they're strong. But it's actually because you know when they go off into a relationship, they won't just give in on what somebody wants. You know that they're not going to be people pleasers, you know that they're not going to have higher levels of agreeableness. They're okay. going to value themselves to say, no, I don't agree with you, I can argue with you about this. And it's okay. a very important thing.
So let's move on to the adults then, right? And, you know, you've talked before about the midlife situation. So yeah. look, women, it can be menopause, yeah. disappointment, all kinds of
pressure,
kind of thing.
Parents, elderly.
Men, it can be like
loneliness.
Their own crisis of, is that it?
Lonely, yeah, that's definitely there, yeah.
And all that can make people angry. So yeah. any advice on dealing
Absolutely.
With that?
It's such an important question, Brendan, because I don't think we talk about it enough, the midlife kind of disquiet. You know, that people living lives of quiet desperation, you know, that kind of silence that you're living in misery in your own head and, you know, you're not expressing what it is. And I would say...
Which can be a simmering rage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you're raging with yourself and you've lost all your friends perhaps, or, you know, you're on your own. You're not that connected to other groups, or you're not involved in things, and, you know, intimacy with your partner drops down dramatically in your 40s and all that, and all of a sudden you're living like kind of roommates and you're just divesting out rules and chores and all that kind of stuff, and you can feel like a real stranger living in your own house, and that's a very sad position to be in. And it's like you got to work against that kind of stuff, because that's the midlife disquiet that can rot away at your soul there. And the first thing I'd always say, you know, when you're looking at this kind of stuff, is try to get connected to people outside your family, try to reconnect with your friends, try to have a little network there that you can go and do things that's okay. separate from the family.
And that's the broader thing.
That's
and
the broader
the immediate
thing.
Of dealing with
well, I would always think about
anger at that age.
Yeah, I would. I, the first thing always is you have to identify what is it that is making you angry.
Okay,
right.
And
I mean,
again, this is after the fact.
Yeah,
so,
you've lost your temper.
Sometimes, like you lose your temper, right? You calm down, you move on. We actually need to not move on so quickly and sit down and reflect.
No. If you move on, it's just simmering away there. You go on holiday, you take it on tour with you. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's just, you know, and it comes out with heightened stress on holiday and all that. And you're kind of going, I don't know, I never want. And then we have to always watch what we say. You know, our language really matters. When we get into an argument, you say, I should never have married you. And all, you know, all these things that come out just to annoy your partner. I remember what I used to say to my wife in an argument was, I did the dishwasher for you earlier. Because I knew that would annoy her when we were early. Like, for me, is it for me?
Yeah.
And I used to annoy her, because, and we often talked about it afterwards. What's about that really annoys you? The idea that, like, it's somehow for me, it's for the family and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I know that kind of annoys you. And then we stopped doing it, right? But that's what you kind of do when you're in these relationships with people that are so intimate. You know exactly the trigger that annoys somebody, and you launch it and you say it and you launch barbs and all that. I would sit down, cold cognition, and figure out what is it in that argument that was really there? Why is it in our relationship? You know, what are you feeling? This is what I'm feeling. And it's very important that you get that pronoun, I. This is what I feel here. When you say that, and you say to me, you know, you're lazy, you never do this, my dad was right, or, you know, whatever it is that gets said that really hurts your feelings.
Okay.
You know, when you say that, I really, it really gets to me.
So right? Anger is a symptom of all these other kinds
all
of things.
All these other
actually.
Things, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, just the last point, because it's a really important thing. What do you do if you're middle-aged and you lose your temper and all that? Honestly, a bit of a physical activity, Brendan.
Yeah,
you know, let
it out, like
running. All these really good hormones go when you run. Really important: running, boxing, exercising, press ups, anything. You know, whenever I've had a bad moment, let's say I say to my wife, I'm not feeling great. That's a little code word, and she go for a walk. I go for a run, and you just get distance from it, and you come back, and then slightly it's changed.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a really important thing just to kind of go for a run, bring in healthy exercises into your life, healthy practices into your life. Because if you are overly getting, you know, annoyed, it's that you're probably burnt out. You're overwhelmed. You're not processing things properly. The slightest thing is irking you. I would say figure out what's that about and pull back from things and do a bit more exercise and, you know, that kind of mindfulness. A bit of breathing is always important.
Yeah. Yeah. So the body actually can be the way of dealing with it rather
Absolutely.
Than
yeah.
up in the head. Yeah. Come here. So, we're not going to, like, obviously, if somebody's in a relationship where they are feeling in fear of anyone or anything,
that's
a different conversation,
that's absolutely
and
different.
They go get help and get out and all that, right? But if you're in a situation, okay, let's start with, if you're getting into a relationship, so you're getting to know someone, and that person seems to be kind of little bit quick to anger or has flashes or whatever. Is that a red flag?
It would be.
Yeah, okay.
It would be.
Yeah.
Depending to see what level of their anger, you know, how they're irked and all that. And what is irking them? You know, what do they lose their temper about? That would be a very important thing to kind of think about when you're going to a relationship with someone and thinking about what will they be like when things get far more complicated, when life gets really more complicated, if we bring, if we're lucky enough to bring children into this world, you know, what will the person be like then? And now we're trying to figure out what is their family like and what's their background like and why do they have an unrealistic expectation that they should never be? Or I'd be looking at those things. I do think we fall into relationships and we don't think about the person that deeply. And I think it's important that we do think about someone like that and figure out, you know, well, you know, if you get a really bad event in an early relationship where they smash something or, you know, they make you feel fearful, I'd be thinking, you know, reconsider.
So if you're in a relationship then with somebody and the relationship is good, like, you know, you could be, be together years, kids, whatever, right? And you're committed to it and everything and you want to work things out, but you're finding that the person is maybe a little bit angry than they used to be, more prone to anger or whatever. What's that conversation there?
Oh, important conversation. That? Yeah. That's really healthy to sit down and say, my wife said to me, look, you know, you seem a little bit more agitated in the last couple of weeks. What's going on for you? You know, because you know you shouted at the child there yesterday about nothing.
Have you told someone they're agitated recently? Because like that's a bit like calm down. It doesn't.
If they're agitated, it would be.
Yeah. Okay.
But when, and saying when you're nice and calm, everything's going well. You know your time to have a conversation. Say, look, can we talk about things at the moment? And I'd sit down and say, look, you know, you don't seem yourself. You seem a little bit agitated here, and you seem like you're overreacting to things. What's coming up for you? And I think that's a really important conversation. Because you'll be surprised what it might be. It might be fear. It might be I don't feel like I've achieved anything in my life. I don't feel like, you know, that thing that we can feel in our mid-40s. I don't think I hit the career I wanted to hit. And it's nearly, I feel like my career is kind of come, you know, I'm never going to hit the place I want to get to. I'm very frustrated. They're really important conversations to have so that someone isn't bottling it away.
Okay, so again, this is going back to anger is a symptom again.
Yeah, it is.
Of underlying stuff that wants to be kind of
expressed.
Heard,
exactly. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's like that Johnny Rotten, anger is an energy. It absolutely is. And it's a message. And if you listen to it, if you just react and explode all the time, you're never going to get that message. But if you think about what am I actually annoyed about here, you'll get a really deep insight into something that's happened in your life or what you're feeling at the moment.
Okay. And a person can help their partner with that process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it might be that your partner needs to go and talk to somebody if they are feeling that deep malaise in their mid-40s, that's an important thing to go off and talk about. What is the disappointment that you're feeling there? What is the sadness around your career or your relationship or whatever it is? That's an important thing to go off and have and investigate that.
So in terms of going for help, we hear about anger management. Is that a real thing, an anger management course?
There are courses designed around how to kind of like the dialectical kind of approach to kind of anger where you're kind of figuring out the impulses between the amygdala and the neocortex and how to bring the neocortex online a bit better. That kind of stuff, for sure. There are courses developed around there how to know your triggers.
Okay.
How to figure out what it is that really irks you.
To break down the process kind of thing.
And for me, honestly, how I deal with my anger, because we all have it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like humour for me. I laugh at how ridiculously annoying the situation is.
Really? Yeah. Isn't that a great way to get perspective on anything? Yeah, yeah. So you stand back and you laugh at it and then it's absurd.
It's absurd.
It loses its power.
It loses its power,
How quickly are you able to kick into laughing at yourself?
Quite quickly these days.
Yeah, can you? Yeah?
Not so much in my 20s, to be honest. But now I can. I can just look at the absurdity of this and think, this is bizarre and this is really annoying or whatever it is, but there's something in this too. And another thing, just on this, you know, when things don't work out, or you're on holiday or whatever it is, or, you know, when things don't go well.
Yeah.
You remember those moments better than the actual things going well. You know, you remember the child getting sick in the car driving down the road. You remember the time the plane was delayed for 7 hours. You were sitting on the thing. You remember those things. Yeah. Those things become kind of like a fun memory in some ways. But it's like Woody Allen, tragedy plus time. Once you get enough time and distance from it, it becomes kind of funny because it was so frustrating at the time. And so just think about that too. This will be a bit of fun. I also have my kids.
Okay.
We'll laugh about this in a couple of years now.
By the way, would you lose your rag in front of your kids? Is that okay? I think sometimes people, they do get angry in front of their kids. They feel really bad about it.
No, it's okay. No, depending on the severity of losing, when you describe losing your rag. Like, I mean, I would also...
We're talking within the normal range and keep stressing. Yeah.
I would also say I'm getting really frustrated here, guys. You know, I'd say, I'll name it. I'm getting pretty frustrated here. I'm annoyed with this situation, whatever it is. Yeah, okay. I mean, that, again, what I said the last time we were here, your children can't come out of a Walton's environment, because when they go into the world, it's not going to be like, they're going to meet angry people, they're going to meet people who are manipulative, and they're going to meet, they have to meet you as a real human being and seeing you as someone who loses their temper from time to time.
Okay.
That's normal.
Listen, there's a quick question here. I'm not sure that you're qualified to answer, but right, you'll say if you're not. Can rage be a symptom of perimenopause? It makes you feel like you're going crazy. It comes from nowhere.
Yeah, it can be. No, yeah, it can be. Of course. I mean, think of adolescence, the hormones, and think of like menopause and perimenopause. Of course, there's an incredible amount of hormones flowing around there. And for men in their 40s, testosterone is decreasing by 1 to 2%. There's an awful lot going on biologically in your body in those years. Of course, you're not able to process. With menopause and perimenopause, it's like a fog on your brain, so you can't, something's annoying you, you can't process it, you blow up because you feel threatened.
Okay, so get help on
that's
that
normal
one. Yeah. Okay, Richard Hogan,
thanks,
terrific.
Brendan.
Thanks very much. We'll take a break.